tonight, Sarah. Thank you. That was beautiful. Let's take our Bibles tonight, open the book of Hosea chapter 4. Hosea chapter 4. I know, of course, last week we had our revival services and we weren't in Hosea, but man, what a great revival services we had with Brother Scott Pauley. And what a great meeting there. And if you have not had a chance to listen to those messages, I would really encourage you to go back and listen to them. I would say this, you probably need to start Sunday morning because they kind of progress through. But man, just some powerful messages there. And then appreciate Brother Joel preaching Sunday morning while we were away. And then my dad doing our the adult class on Sunday night. So appreciate all of those taking steps there. Hosea chapter 4. We're not going to read through the whole chapter, but let me just kind of break the chapter down again so we kind of remember where we're at. In Hosea chapter 4, we find this case that God is bringing against Israel, just as a lawyer presents his case against the criminal or whatever. You find God presenting his case against Israel. In verses 1 through 3, we have this charge against the people. What God is saying is happening in Israel, and really just kind of a sad situation here in the book of Hosea, because he says there's no truth, there's no mercy, there's no knowledge of God in the land. And what a sad statement to say about a nation that was supposed to be God's people, that there's no truth, there's no mercy, there's no knowledge of God there in the land. And so he gives this charge against the people of Israel. And then from verses 4 down really to verse number 14, you have the charge against the priests. And the priests, of course, were the religious leaders of the day, and not only religiously, but even kind of had a say in the political realm as well. But just again, in verse number 6, he says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because thou," and again, he's talking to the priest. He's dealt with Israel in verses 1 through 3, but now he's talking specifically to the religious leaders, "because thou hast rejected knowledge." They rejected the knowledge of God. They rejected, they didn't want to have anything to do with God and to know about God and to grow in the grace and knowledge of God. And so God says, "Therefore, I will reject you as well." He says, "Thou shalt be no priest to me, saying thou hast forgotten the law of thy God. I will also forget thy children." And again, just another sad case against people that were supposed to be the people of God, but even the religious leaders, right? What we would say maybe today, kind of like the pastors or those that were leading religiously. And he says, "You have rejected me. You don't want to teach the things of God." And so he says, "I have rejected you." By the way, maybe just as a side note here, obviously they continued being priests, but just because someone says they're a pastor does not mean that God's hand is on them. Just because someone has a church or has a leadership position does not mean that God is blessing them. It does not mean that God's hand is on them. These were priests, and God says, "I have nothing to do with you." They were the ones that were trying to lead spiritually. God says, "I don't have anything to do with you. I have rejected you from being priests. You can have the position, but you have no authority. You have no power with God in this position." And so again, a very sad commentary on the people and the priests of the land here. And just very sad as far as what was happening here. And again, we're not going to take time to go back and read all of that, but really from verses 6 all the way down to verse 14, just the sad state of the nation because of the religious leaders, how they chose instead of trying to preach righteousness and truth, instead they were more concerned about sensuality, they were more concerned about worldliness and carnality and just living a lifestyle of pleasure instead of following God. And then we come down to verse number 15. So we've seen the charge against the people and the charge against the priests. But in verse number 15, there's another charge that God gives. And this is not so much a charge against someone, but a charge to someone. This is kind of a warning, right? This is a warning shot here. You ever heard the old saying, you know, that was a warning shot across the bow, right? In the old days, is the ships would give a warning shot. Hey, this is it. If you don't stop, if you don't surrender, this is your last chance here, right? This is kind of that warning shot. This is that shot across the bow of God saying, all right, I'm gonna charge. This is a charge that I'm giving to you. It's not against you, it is to you. It's to a group of people here. And notice he says in verse 15, though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend. And come not ye unto Gilgal, neither go ye up to Bethaven, nor swear the Lord liveth. For Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as the lamb in a large place. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Their drink is sour. They have committed whoredom continually. Her rulers with shame do love give ye. The wind hath bound her up in her wings, and they shall be ashamed of their sacrifices. So this third charge that we find here, God has already dealt with Israel, the people. He's already dealt with the priests who are the religious leaders. But now he's giving a warning to Judah. Now, again, remember, you have the nation of Israel is divided into two kingdoms. You have the northern 10 tribes of Israel, and you have the southern 2 tribes of Judah. Hosea is primarily dealing with Israel, but God does speak to Judah occasionally throughout these different minor prophets. And really, the thought that God is giving to Judah is, you better take notice. You better take notice of what's going on with your sister Israel. You better take notice of what's happening with Israel, because just because you are God's chosen people, and just because you still have the temple, just because you still have Jerusalem, doesn't mean that you get special privileges. If this is what God is saying is going to happen to Israel, you better take warning, because it can happen to you too. And so God is giving this charge to Israel, this warning to the nation of Israel. And really, what he's saying here, and again, this illustration is really great at what he says in verse 16, for Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer. So God is saying to Judah, pay attention to the backsliding heifer. It's a great thing, right? Pay attention to the backsliding heifer. And again, so God has given his charge against Israel and against the people. But notice what he says in verse number 15. Though thou, Israel, play the harlot. And we've seen this all throughout, from chapter 1 all the way through. In fact, what we've seen even through chapter 4, as God has used this illustration of Hosea and Gomer in dealing with God and Israel. And so he says, though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend. And come not ye unto Gilgal, neither go ye up to Bethaven, nor swear the Lord liveth. So notice that phrase. He says, yet let not Judah offend, in the middle of verse number 15. Israel has played the harlot. This is what Israel has done. She's played the harlot. But he says, yet let not Judah offend. What's he saying here? He says, Judah, stay out of it. Stay out of it. This has nothing to do with you. Pay attention to what's going to happen, but you stay out of it. And you heed to the warning about what you're going to see, but stay out of it. This does not concern you. There's nothing that you can do for Israel, because God's judgment has already been declared. He says, stay out of it. Don't have any part with what they're doing. You say, well, why would God say this? Well, because Judah, all throughout, even from the dividing of the kingdom, Judah had a tendency to want to side with Israel. And again, they, understandably so, right? I mean, they're the same people, right? Yes, they're separated because one group said, we're going to have this guy to be our king, and another group said, we're going to have this guy to be our king. But they're one nation, really. They're one people group. They're the Jews or the Hebrew people. And so, of course, there's going to be the tendency to want to unite as a people, okay? But for some reason, Judah was the one that always got sucked into to Israel's problems, right? Judah was the one that always got kind of dealt the bad blow because they were the ones always trying to help Israel out. Think about it. How many times did the kings of Judah join together with the kings of Israel, right? If you go back to 1 Kings chapter 22, just to give you an example, right? If you remember the story here in 1 Kings chapter 22, 1 Kings chapter 22, of course, during this time, the king of Israel is Ahab. Ahab, of course, was a very, very wicked king of Israel. And we've talked about him a little bit. But in verse number 2, we find that it came to pass in the third year that Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, came down to the king of Israel. So you have Ahab, who's the king of Israel. You have Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. And Israel basically says, hey, we're going to go to war. And Judah, we want you to come with us, right? We want you to tag along. And so Jehoshaphat comes up to where Ahab is, and it says, the king of Israel said unto his servants, know ye that Ramoth Gilead is ours, and we be still, and take it not out of the hand of the king of Syria. So he said, hey, Ramoth Gilead is supposed to be ours. God gave that to us, right? It's in our kingdom, that's supposed to be ours. So we need to take it back. But we need you to come and help us. Judah, come and help us do this, right? And he said unto Jehoshaphat, will thou go with me to battle to Ramoth Gilead? Now, here, again, Jehoshaphat should have known better. Jehoshaphat should have understood what kind of king Ahab was. He knew what kind of king Ahab was. He knew that he was a wicked king. He knew that Jezebel was a wicked queen, and even the ones that they came from were wicked, and the ones that would come after them would be wicked. And so Jehoshaphat knew better than to join forces with Israel. But watch what Jehoshaphat says. And Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses. Now, again, in a sense, what Jehoshaphat is saying, hey, we're the same people, right? We're Hebrews, we're Jews, and so, man, I want what's best for you. But here's the thing, Jehoshaphat should have realized they were not as Israel was. Because Israel was steeped into idolatry. That's what Ahab and Jezebel, I mean, you think about it. Why is Elijah fleeing from Jezebel after he's slain 400 prophets? Because they were so steeped in idolatry. And even after killing 400 of Jezebel's prophets, Jezebel says, I'm going to take your head off. And Elijah runs for his life because he knows, man, Jezebel is a wicked woman, Ahab is a wicked king, and they are full of idolatry. And now here comes Jehoshaphat, come along and said, hey, we're one. No, they weren't one. They had been one people, and they were one people as the Hebrews or the Jews, but they were not one people. And when Jehoshaphat says, I am as thou art, that wasn't true. My people is thy people. That wasn't true. My horses is thy horses. That wasn't true. They were to be separate. God didn't want Judah getting involved. In fact, that's why when you come down later, they have this problem. And Ahab's like, well, you know, hey, we ought to go. And Jehoshaphat says, well, we probably ought to get a word from the Lord. You think? Maybe we should have asked God if this is something we should even do first, right? And Ahab says, well, you know, hey, all the prophets are saying, all the prophets of Baal, they're saying, hey, you know, we're going to win, you know, so go up, you know, go up, you're going to win. And Jehoshaphat says, well, is there a prophet of the Lord? Now, why would he ask that? Think about this. If thou art as I am and my people is your people, why would he ask for a prophet of the Lord after all these prophets have just said, oh, yeah, God's going to give you the victory? Because he knew that they were false prophets. He says, no, 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 we need a prophet of the Lord. And so Ahab says, well, there's this one guy, but I don't really like him because he never agrees with me. He always preaches against me, and I don't really like what he says. And so Jehoshaphat says, well, go. Why don't you go and bring him? And so they go and get a prophet by the name of Micaiah, and they come to Micaiah, and they said, hey, Ahab wants Jehoshaphat to go with him. They want you to come up here, and they're going to ask you. And so we're just telling you, when they say, are we supposed to go up, you better agree. You better agree, Micaiah. So Micaiah comes up. Jehoshaphat and Ahab are sitting there on their thrones, and Ahab and Jehoshaphat say, hey, we're going to go up and we're going to take Ramoth-Gilead. What do you think, Micaiah? Micaiah says, go ahead. And Ahab gets mad. And he says, Micaiah, how many times have I told you don't lie to me? Imagine. Ahab wants nothing to do with this guy because you know he tells the truth. And when Micaiah says, go up, Ahab says, I know you're lying. I know you're lying. Tell me the truth. He says, well, if you go up, you're not going to come back. You're going to die. See, I told you I didn't like this guy. He's always against me, right? Jehoshaphat should have known. And this is what God is saying to Judah back in Hosea. He's saying, look, Judah, stay out of it. Stay away. God has already pronounced judgment. Don't feel sorry for what's going to happen to Israel. Don't feel sorry for what they're going to go through. You stay out of it. Don't have any part of it. Don't try to come to their aid. Don't try to come and help them because God has already pronounced judgment and it will come to pass. So stay out of it. Don't have any part with them. Too often, instead of staying away from sin, though, so many times Christians try to see how close we can get, thinking that we can turn away from it any time that we want. Well, I'm not like those other people. I can control it. I can step away any time I want to step away. God says, you better stay away. You better stay away. Because you can't control it. You can't just step away anytime you want to step away. You stay as far away from it as possible. That's why when you think about Lot and Abraham, when they were getting ready to divide, to split up, and Abraham says, Lot, you choose where you want to go. And Lot looked on the well-watered plains of Sodom, and he said, hey, that's where I want to go. That's what's going to be best for me. And no concern at all for Abraham, but that's what's going to be best for me. And so the Bible says he pitched his tent in the plains and his door opened towards Sodom. And every day he's seeing Sodom. And it's not long before Lot is now in Sodom and Gomorrah. He's in the cities. And not only is it just in the cities, but now he's one of the leaders of the city. He's one of the leaders of one of the most wicked cities that there is. And I'm sure Lot could have said, well, hey, I can step away anytime I want. I can take my family out of here anytime I want. And then the angels come and said, Lot, get out. Well, we don't really want to. Get your family, get your sons-in-laws, and get your daughters, and get out of here. And what does the Bible say? They laughed at Lot. They mocked him. What happened to, I can get out anytime I want? And when the angels had to grab the two daughters and wife, or Lot had to grab his wife, and they're leaving. They said, hey, don't turn around. Don't look back. And, oh, we can handle this. We've got control of this. And Lot's wife looks back and turns into a pillar of salt. Do you understand that we are not as strong as we think we are? We get this idea that somehow because, you know, hey, I'm faithful to church, I go Sunday morning, I go Sunday night, I go Wednesday night, I read my Bible, I've got control. And that's exactly what the devil wants you to think. You've got control. Because when you think that, you don't have it. When you think you've got control, you've got the farthest thing from it. And that's exactly what the devil wants you to think. That you're in control. You can step away from sin anytime you want. You can walk away anytime you want. So you go ahead, just try to get as close as you can. Just try to get as close as you can to it, thinking that you can get away anytime you want. And he's got you. And that's what God is saying to Judah. Stay out of it. You stay away from this, because if you start getting involved in this, it's going to come back on you as well. You stay away from it. You stay out of it. Notice what he says back in Hosea chapter 4. He says, though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend. Judah, you stay out of it. And watch what he says here. And come not ye unto Gilgal, neither go up to Beth-Aven, nor swear the Lord liveth. Now again, remember Bethel and Gilgal were two important cities. We when we go through the book of Joshua, we find about Gilgal, and that was the place that Joshua would always come back to for that spiritual refreshment and being able to find out where God wanted him to go next and things. And so that was an important place. And then, of course, Bethel, man, that was a very important place as well, because both Abraham and Jacob had set up altars there. And then Israel had come to make a city there called Bethel. And so these were both very important cities. And yet God is telling Judah, don't go to Gilgal. You stay out of Bethel. In fact, actually, notice what he says here. You keep thinking I'm saying the wrong word, but I'm not. He says, go ye not up to Beth-Aven. Notice he doesn't say Bethel. He said, Pastor, I told you you're saying the wrong word. No, he changes it. He changes it. Why does he change it? What does Bethel mean? Remember when Jacob, he's sitting, he's laying there under the stars that night, and God gives him this vision of the angels ascending and descending on this ladder, and he wakes up and he says, man, the Lord is in this place, right? He says, this is going to be called Bethel. Why? The house of God. You know, Beth-Aven does not mean the house of God. In fact, it means something quite opposite. Beth-Aven means the house of evil, the house of deceit. What had been a place that God had met with Abraham and Jacob and the Israelites, now God says, this is no longer the house of God. Oh, it's the same place, but God's not there anymore. Now it's a house of deceit. It's a house of evil with what is happening. And God's telling Judah, hey, just because that was a spiritual place one time doesn't mean it's always going to be a spiritual place. Sometimes we get this idea, once something is spiritual, it is always spiritual. Right? Once something is spiritual, it's always going to be spiritual. You know, that's not always true. The house of God, Hosea, under the inspiration of God, calls the house of evil, Beth-Aven. You know, you can look at churches that, man, throughout Scripture, those the early New Testament churches that were there, you know what, those were, you know, as they began, they were spiritual churches, but you know what, they're not there anymore. They're gone. Just because something is spiritual one time doesn't mean it's going to perpetuate spirituality there. We get this idea that just because we do something over and over and over that once was spiritual, it just continues to be spiritual. That is a wrong mentality. Well, you know, I read my Bible and I pray, and I remember times when I really got close to God when I read my Bible and prayed, and so now, just because I read my Bible and pray, that's spiritual. That doesn't mean it's spiritual. You can read your Bible and you can pray and get absolutely nothing out of it. How spiritual is that? Well, but I remember one time. Well, yeah, that was one time. But just because something was spiritual doesn't mean that it's always going to be spiritual. So God is telling Judah, he's giving them this warning. Notice what he says here. For Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as the lamb in a large place. And I got to hurry because time is going fast. Israel is like a backsliding heifer. What is backsliding? What do we say backsliding is? What is backsliding? How do we define backsliding today? Brad? What? Stubborn? Okay.
Back to your old ways.
Back to your old ways? Okay. How do we describe backsliding? Rob?
Not being, Not being where you were spiritually?
Okay. Steve?
Walking away from God.
Okay. All right. There's a lot of different ways people try to define backsliding. If I was to say, is backsliding when someone leaves the church and is living in sin, would we say that's backsliding? Some of you aren't, you're like, I don't know if I'm supposed to say yes to this or no to this. Is he going to trick me, you know? I'm not sure. So I'm just not going to shake my head. I'm just going to be like stone-faced. I'm not even going to move my eyes. Some of us would say, well, that's backsliding because they, you know, they're not in church anymore. They're living in sin. But is that all backsliding is? Sometimes we get this idea of a visual backsliding in the sense of sliding back or falling away. But the word backslide doesn't mean to fall away. The word backslide doesn't mean to go backwards. The word backsliding actually means to be stubborn. Brad, were you reading my notes up here? It means to be stubborn. It means to be rebellious. Can a backslider be in church? See, we get this idea that the backsliders are those that have left church. Now, would we say that's backsliding? Sure, obviously. They're stubborn, they're rebellious, they've left the things of God. But we get this idea, well, if somebody is in church, then they must not be backsliding. Or they must not be backslidden. But a backslider can be in church every week. A backslider can read their Bible. A backslider can pray. A backslider can even sing and give. Because backsliding is simply a refusal to obey God. And he uses this illustration here of a backsliding heifer. And if you've ever worked with cows, or if you've ever seen anybody working with cows, and you're trying to get a cow to go through a gate, or you're trying to load a cow into maybe a truck or something, or into a trailer, and you know, it seems like everything's going well, right, until you get right up to the gate, or you get right up to the trailer bed, and you're up at the ramp, and what does that heifer, or what does that cow end up doing? Right, you're just leading them right along. You got the lead right there, and you're leading on. They're like, whoop! What do they do? They stop and they do something. They take their front legs and they tighten them up. They stick them down in the ground and they start leaning back a little bit. Do we have that picture up there? I think we got a picture of a backsliding heifer, right? There's a backsliding heifer. I mean, it's got that front feet down to the ground, and you're going to pull and pull, and that legs are tightened up. They're not going to move. They're trying to lean back as far as possible. They are just being stubborn. And I don't think three guys could pull that cow through that gate. Because when we get stubborn, we get kind of strong in our stubbornness. We don't want to yield. It's interesting. Proverbs chapter 29, verse number 1 says, "He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, not without remedy." That idea of hardening the neck is that stubbornness. Kind of like that heifer, that cow would plant those feet forward, and man, they're just going to plant those feet and they're not going to let you pull them forward no matter how much you pull. It's like a person with that stubbornness. Man, you're not going to move me. I don't care what you say. We just get stubborn. That's what backsliding is. In fact, look over in the book of Jeremiah. In Jeremiah chapter 3, God, again, dealing through one of his prophets with Israel and Judah. Notice what he says. In Jeremiah chapter 3, notice in verse number 6, he says, "The Lord said also unto me in the days of Josiah the king, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel hath done? She is gone up upon every high mountain and under every green tree, and there hath played the harlot. And I said, after she had done all these things, turn thou unto me." Now watch. "But she returned not. And her treacherous sister, Judah, saw it.
And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorcement. Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. So again, this is even after Hosea, and God is giving a warning to Judah saying, hey, you take warning here. Don't follow her ways. Don't follow this backsliding heifer. Don't become stubborn and rebellious to the things of God. And instead of Judah paying attention and saying, wow, look at what God is doing to Israel. Look at their response. And they have totally turned away from God. Instead of listening to what God had said to Israel, Judah decides, we're going to do the same thing. And they followed Israel's ways in going and committing this spiritual adultery, this idea of going upon every high mountain and under every green tree, and there hath played the harlot. It's a spiritual adultery that they're worshiping these false idols. You can read throughout the rest of the chapter there. And Jeremiah calls them out for their idolatry. They snubbed their nose at God. They said, God, I know what you said, but we're not going to listen to you. We're going to do what we want to do. Friend, that is backsliding. And churches with Christians can be full of backsliders. It's not those that are just out in the world. Well, they left church. They're backslidden. Well, at least they're honest about it. Because there's a lot of Christians in church that are so pious. Oh, I'll come and I'll have my Bible and all, but go ahead, preacher. See if you can move me. Go ahead. Make my day. At least them out there, they're honest with what they're doing. And so many Christians in churches are hypocrites because we want to pretend that we're spiritual. But yet, when we see what God says and we hear what God says, I don't care. I don't care that God says to live spiritual. I don't care that God says to live a righteous life. I don't care that God says I ought to have a relationship and a walk with Him. I don't care what God says. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I don't care what God says. And we can sit in the church week after week after week after week after week and be backslidden. And this is why God is telling Judah, you better pay attention. You better open your eyes. Now again, we know, we just read in Jeremiah, they didn't pay attention. They didn't acknowledge what God had said, and instead they followed Israel's ways. As God tries to lead, we stiffen our neck, or as a heifer stiffening her front legs so that she won't be led. We hear what God says, but just like Israel, we say, I'm not going to obey God. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I don't care what God says. Friend, can I just say, when we get to that point, we better be very careful. Because God's going to bring judgment. But here's the real kicker, though. Watch what he says. For Israel slideth back as a backsliding heifer. God says, this is what she's doing, but watch what they want. Now the Lord will feed them as a lamb in a large place. They said, God, we don't care what you say. We're not going to listen to you. We're not going to follow you. But we want you to treat us like a pet lamb. That's what they're saying here. We want you to treat us like a pet. How many of you have a pet? You have a pet, right? You have a pet? How many of you have an inside pet? You have an inside pet. Inside pets are different than outside pets. You know that, right? Outside pets, you'd be like, you know, you're outside, right? But inside pets, they're a little bit different. Inside pets, they get a little bit more love. They get a little bit more attention. They get a little bit probably better food, right? They got the easy life, right? And if any of you have a cat that's inside, you ought to kick it outside. I'm telling you. I'm just kidding.
Just kidding. But I mean, they got an easy life, right? No worries. They don't have to go and turn up the thermostat or anything. Like, my master will take care of that. They don't have to worry about the food's going to come from. They'll put it in the bowl for me. All I got to do is come over and act like I'm hungry, and they'll just put it right there. I'm telling you, who's really in control here? Just saying, right? And that's exactly what Israel was wanting. God, we don't want to listen to you, but we sure want your blessings. God, we don't care about following you, but we sure'd like for you to take care of us. You see the hypocrisy in that? God, we're not going to follow you. We don't care anything about what you say. We're not going to do what you say. We're not going to listen to you. But will you treat us like a pet lamb? Remember the story that Nathan brings before David? He said there was a family that had only one lamb, and they took care of that lamb. I mean, that lamb had some special treatment. And then this other guy had hundreds of them. But when his friend came, what did he do? He took the pet lamb and stole it and killed it. David got pretty mad about that, didn't he? I wonder how mad God gets when we say, God, we don't care about you. We don't want to listen to you. We don't want to obey you. We're not going to follow you. But I need you to bless me. I need you to bless me with a job. I need you to bless me with work. I need you to bless me with finances. I need you to bless me with all these different things. Come on, God, go ahead, bring it on. And then we get mad at God because he doesn't. It's kind of like Ahab and Micaiah. Micaiah says, I'll tell you the truth. Ahab didn't want to know the truth. And then when Micaiah told him the truth, he got mad for telling him the truth. You see where God's like, I don't know what to do with you anymore. I just don't know what to do with you. And that's why, you know what? I'm done. Judgment is coming. And so he's telling Judah, be careful and stay out of it. Notice, Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. This is what they've chosen. They've chosen that they want to be joined to idols. In fact, the word joined there is the idea of being spellbound or charmed or that just in awe of it. They were in awe of idolatry. The very thing that God had warned them of. They were in awe of it. They were spellbound to it. I mean, they just, and we'll see in the next verse here, they couldn't get enough of this sensual carnality that they were living. Look in verse number 18. Their drink is sour. They have committed whoredom continually. Their drink has turned. It's not even good, but yet they're continually committing the whoredom, and the leaders who are leading in this debauchery, there's no shame in what is being done. That her rulers with shame do love give ye. And that idea is they love what they're doing. They love this. Again, you can't even hardly describe what's going on here. I mean, it is really RXXX rated what's going on here. And yet they said, that's what we love. This is what really brings enjoyment to us. And this is what we love. And we want more. And we want more. And God says, okay, fine. You got it. God says you'll reap what you sow. God says, I've warned you, and I've warned you, and I've warned you, and you've refused, or you've refused, you've refused. God said, finally enough. The wind hath bound her up in her wings. They shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. They're completely possessed with this lifestyle that they're living, this sensuality, this carnality, this idolatry, and not this harlotry as God speaks about spiritual harlotry, but even the physical harlotry as well. And what is going on? And God says, look, they have been so consumed with these things. They are bound up. The wind hath bound her up in her wings. There's no escaping it now. There's no escaping it now. Judgment is going to come because of their wickedness, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. And God is giving Judah, saying, Judah, I want you to I want you to take warning here. I want you to be aware of what is happening. Look what they're doing. Stay out of it. Get as far away from it as you can, because God is going to bring judgment. But heed the warning. Heed the warning. Pay attention to this backsliding heifer. Pay attention to what she's doing, and pay attention to what God is going to do to her because of her idolatry, the spiritual harlotry that she is committing. I wish I could say, as we've already looked at the passage, I wish I could say that Judah took notice and changed. But she didn't. And of course, we know that Israel is going to go into captivity first. But it's not going to be long after that Judah is going to go into captivity as well. And they're going to follow Israel's example. God gives us his word, and even Paul tells about this in Corinthians. He says, God's word is given to us as an example so that we can learn from it. Just as God is telling Judah, learn from what you're seeing. Learn from what is going on. Don't make the same mistakes that Israel is making. God's giving a warning to us. Yeah, we're not Old Testament. We're not part of Israel. I understand that. But the warning is still there. You turn your nose to God. You just flippantly say, God, I don't need you. I don't want you. I'm glad I'm saved. I'm glad I get to go to heaven. But that's all I care about. God, leave me alone. Look, you're treading on thin ice. And instead, God says, why don't you turn? Why don't you repent? Why don't you come back? Why don't you follow me? Why don't you fall in love with me again as we read that story of Gomer and Hosea? Why don't you fall in love with me again and let's make this right again and let God bless and let God work through it. But don't just keep hardening your neck. Don't just keep those legs stiff as God is trying to lead and God is trying to direct. I'm like, I am not going to move. It's sad that there are so many Christians who are backslidden and they sit in church week after week after week and they don't even know it. Because they think the backslidden are the ones that are out of church. They're the ones that have left church. They're the ones that are living in sin. Well, friend, if we're not following God, if we're not being obedient to Him, if we're not listening to Him, we may be inside, but we're living in sin just as much as they are. Just because we're in a building. Again, remember, a place doesn't make it spiritual. Oh, this is the house of God. Not if you're not spiritual. Bethel can be Bethaven at the same time. You understand what I'm saying? There can be some that are here that, man, this is Bethel. This is the house of God. And when we sing, man, we're singing praises to God. And we're listening to the message. We're asking God to work. And man, God is blessing and God is working through our lives. And there's some sitting in the very same room. It's not Bethel. It's Bethaven. Because we're sitting there saying, God, leave me alone. I'm here. Don't ask me to do anything else. Pay attention. Pay attention to the backsliding heifer. Because God says if you're not careful, you're going to follow right in her steps. Father, I pray, Lord, you'd work through our lives. Lord, help us to realize just because a place has been spiritual doesn't mean that it always will be. Just because we come and we sing praises to you, Lord, we can come and we can sing and we can listen and we can have a Bible and we can pray and we can do all these different things. But Lord, if we're not allowing you to lead us and guide us to what you would have us to do, if we are stiffening our neck, if we are like that backsliding heifer that is stubborn and plants those feet in the ground and says, "You will not move me," Lord, that is just as much sin as someone who is outside these walls living a wicked lifestyle. God, I pray you'd help us to learn from the book of Hosea, to learn from Israel, to learn from Judah, to take heed, to take warning to the backsliding heifer. Lord, that we would have that desire to follow you, to allow you to lead us to what you would have us to do and what you would have us to be. Lord, may our hearts always be tender. May we not be stiff-necked and stubborn. May we listen. May we yield to you. Tonight, with our heads bowed and our eyes closed, the piano is just going to play softly just for a moment. Maybe tonight, God's speaking to your heart about something. Maybe there's an area of your life where you know you've been stiff-necked, stubborn. God's trying to lead you, and you've just planted those feet, and you said, "God, I'm not moving." Maybe tonight it's time to say, "All right, Lord, I'll follow. I'll let you lead me, whatever you'd have me to do."